You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Tuesday afternoon. My name is Maggie Dawn, host of this, The Maggie Dawn Show, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. On Tuesdays, I am often, at least on my good weeks, joined by a fabulous co-host, James Santol, former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. He hosts the program Amicus, a law review on Saturdays from 9 to 11 across the network. A bit of breaking news. If you have been following the Sean Combs sex trafficking trial in Manhattan, apparently the jury has sent a note to the judge indicating that they've reached verdicts on 4 of 5 counts, which include sex trafficking and transportation for prostitution, but that the jury remains divided on the most complex count that he was facing, the RICO count. That's count one. So again, that's some interesting breaking news. Also today, a federal judge has blocked RF Kennedy Jr., the head of the Department of Health and Human Services, from dismantling U.S. healthcare agencies, finding that the administration's plan, Trump's plan to make us all sicker, violates the Administrative Procedure Act. Importantly, the judge ended her ruling today with these words. Circling back to the separation of powers principles covered earlier in this decision, the executive branch is vested with the power and is imbued with the responsibility to faithfully execute the laws which govern the governance structure of our country. Note that, faithfully execute the laws which govern the governance structure of our country. More on that in a moment. She continues, the executive branch does not have the authority to order, organize, or implement wholesale changes to the structure and functions of the agencies created by Congress. Something basically everybody considered a fairly well-settled point until this administration. She continues, as Judge Smith in this very district court recently warned when presented with the declining depth of civics education in public schools, quote, we may choose to survive as a country by respecting our Constitution, the laws and norms of political and civic behavior, and by educating our children on civics, the rule of law, and what it really means to be an American and what America means. Or we may ignore these things at our and their peril. Strong words there. It is this function of our governance system, the governing of our governance system, that is at greatest threat. Now, this doesn't mean much in the abstract to us, but here's the question that I want to ask each and every one of you, including you, Mr. Santel, and that is, does it feel to you like Democrats are just constantly playing catch-up? Like, there's no real forethought into what might be coming next from the Trump administration. And here's a couple of thoughts on this. I think, and many legal scholars think, that the Supreme Court's bend in Trump 2.0 was utterly predictable on virtually all fronts. Now, to put this in proportion, again, Donald Trump has accessed the Supreme Court's shadow docket 19 times in under 6 months or six-ish months. That is outstripping even Trump's pace from his first administration, and it also outstrips all predecessor presidents, regardless of party. What does this mean? He's using the Supreme Court to effectively keep his policies in place, even if they may be totally unconstitutional. He's won 12 out of 19 of those, but only in one of those cases has the Supreme Court given even the tiniest indication that what he's doing is actually legal. In all the other cases, they either said nothing or frankly hat-tipped a bit that it may be illegal. So he's won 12 out of 19, but only one of those is legal? So where does that leave the rest of us in the interim period? So again, my question to every one of you is, are Democrats constantly playing catch-up? And why? How do we fix that? What's at stake? Now, to put what the Supreme Court's done for Donald Trump 2.0 in perspective, again, the decision on Friday was about getting rid of these universal injunctions. But the Supreme Court was twice presented with that exact question under the Biden administration, and yet it chose never to answer it. So as far as that equal justice under the law thing, seems a little bit suspect to me. And I think Democrats have to stop seeing leaves on trees and try to see more of the forest and get a bit better at the big picture strategy. Again, we've got court proceedings. We've got polls saying that Trump is in the toilet. People hate the big, brutal bill. They're scared of it. And we've got protests going on nationwide. So where are the Democrats to make hay of all of this? I'm not quite sure. Jim, what do you make of it? Are the Democrats just perpetually playing catch up to Republicans?
You know, one of my favorite broadcasters many years ago, he happened to be on a major network, often said, to a knife fight with Republicans, sometimes the Democrats bring their copies of Proust. Now, you and I are both big, big fans of Proust. There's lots of good stuff in there, but that's your point, right? At times call for more aggressive responses. And to add to the volume and the strength of your question, recognize what happened on Friday has the book end a year ago today, right? Maggie, you and I were also talking about this when the Supreme Court not only found that a president is indeed above the law, cannot be prosecuted for certain kinds of crimes, but also in those first pages said things like a president's got to be agile, got to be athletic, got to be muscular, got to be able to move quickly. That is a commission to Donald Trump 1 year ago. And now we've got the bookend to that from the Supreme Court saying, and oh, by the way, when he acts that way, when he acts as he has done in all of these different areas, all these executive orders, legislating from the White House as opposed to accomplishing compromise,
Congress, right?
When he does that, the worst that you can do now is go into your own federal district court, maybe in your jurisdiction, as you were just saying. Maybe you get the right plaintiffs, and maybe you can get a federal judge to enjoin it right here, right now. But you're going to have to do that maybe 93 times in order to accomplish what you need to accomplish. That's the nature of the challenge to everybody, including the Democrats, who have to wake up and say, this is not just a Supreme Court that is partisan. This is not just a Supreme Court that every so often issues these opinions. We can take umbrage and take objection to what a Kavanaugh or John Roberts says. This is a Supreme Court that's changing the Constitution and changing the very ways in which we do government.
Yeah, that's the constitutional crisis. And instead of Democrats sitting around clutching pearls and saying, oh, my God, there's a constitutional crisis, anticipate that and figure out how to get ahead of the tactics. Right. That's part of what I'm talking about. We got a text from Eric in Madison. Where is the DNC chair? Why is his hair not on fire? I think we should be decrying the court, decrying the lawlessness of the Trump administration, but talking about this in terms of the impacts on people locally. These aren't abstract harms. Things are in peril, and the pain of that peril is coming to your doorstep, right? Like, that's the connection that needs to get made. As far as the DNC chair, I literally could not care less about what party chairs do, because it's not about the parties anymore. This is a cross-partisan issue, meaning this is for all Americans of good faith to stand up. We've got sound of the president today threatening to deport citizens. Jacob, if you can play that puppy when you are ready, let's take a listen, because it's scary.
To happen, and it did happen, but we also have a lot of bad people that have been here for a long time, people that whack people over the head with a baseball bat from behind when they're not looking and kill them, people that knife you when you're walking down the street. They're not new to our country. They're old to our country. Many of them were born in our country. I think we ought to get them the hell out of here, too. You want to know the truth. So maybe that'll be the next job that we'll work on together. But I think getting them out, you know, we forget about them. We have some very bad, we had some bad accidents in New York, and they're not accidents.
It's interesting to me that his prerequisite for deportation is criminality, but it's not proved criminality before a jury of your peers. It's alleged. And didn't that guy get convicted of like 34 felonies?
And he's still a convicted felon to this time. And that should be underscored as well. We've got a president, first time in our nation's history, who is sitting in the White House with a criminal conviction. And yes, indeed, a fairly limp-wristed sentence imposed upon him. But nonetheless, that's a judgment against him. And Maggie, this notion again of doing more, there are things out there that can be done. And it doesn't just have to be the civics instruction that you and I would give, the trappings of class actions and all those kinds of things. It can be those fundamental things joined with, again, using things like the take care clause of the Constitution. That's the oath of office the president takes. I'm going to take care that the laws of the nation be faithfully executed. Take that and you juxtapose it against, pick your executive order. It can be birthright citizenship, but any one of these others, including dismantling USAID, which is coming to an end as of today, all these kinds of firing people who are these in these incredibly important positions, giving access to the Social Security Administration, the Musk team, right? Getting rid of the transgender members of our military from the Pentagon. Pick your item and put those two together. And why is it that in Lafayette Park across from the White House, every single day, there are 435 members of Congress. There are 47 Democratic senators, and maybe there are a few others. Maybe Susan Collins on a good day would also join them up there. Why every single day do we not hear from some of them decrying what is going on and sending that message? And then you join it with what you just indicated with a personal story. Here's a human being. Here's a baby that we know. Here is a person whose husband, whose wife, whose spouse, whose partner has been taken away. Here's somebody who's no longer employed. Here is, as we go into hurricane season, the fact that we no longer have the capacity through NOAA to predict these things, as the president is hoping to do, apparently. All of those things have to be shouted from the soapbox and beyond.
We have Susan from McFarland joining us. Susan, say hello to Jim. What would you like to share?
Oh, hey, Jim. I was enjoying your show on Saturday. I'm listening to you, and I totally agree with you about this. However, I feel very demoralized a lot of times because there's nobody doing this every day, and I can talk to people, and I can do my part, and I can go to marches, and I can call my legislator and my senator, and I can call congressmen. But at the end of the day, until the body that really runs this government, the Democratic Party, the people that who are on the Democratic Congress, really stand up to all this and really in a forceful manner, are we going to make a change? I mean, I agree, the ground up is great, but at this point in time, it doesn't look like we have any ground to stand on. And so many people are suffering. It just breaks my heart.
Susan, thanks so much for that call. When we return, I'm going to give Susan, and I hope every single one of you, a bit of hope about how this has to trickle through the system, that there are the pistons of protest, the pistons of our democracy, the four P's. I'm going to give them to you when we come back. Do not lose faith. The fight continues. Inspired by my sometimes co-host Matt Rothschild, I may even have a poem to inspire you when we return. And don't worry, we're getting to the big, brutal bill and what it might mean in Wisconsin. We got an expert guest coming up at the bottom of the hour. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. If you are rejoining us, this is the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got just the right guest for just this moment coming up at the bottom of the hour. Her name is Kristen Crowell. She is the executive director of Fair Share America. She actually grew up in Milwaukee and her family relied on Social Security. So she's going to help us, again, put in context the big brutal bill, where we stand in this moment, because despite the Senate's vote today, we all have an opportunity to kill the bill and then hold every single Republican in this state accountable for their vote to hurt the middle class, hurt those in greatest need, despite the fact that over 70% of people on Medicaid work full time. And the other 30%, the vast majority of those, upwards of 90% of that remaining 30%, are disabled or elderly or caretaking or have other exemptions from the work requirements. So what is the point? Is it just the cruelty? Oh, wait. No. It's to get the deficit back. Oh, no, checks notes. This will explode the deficit by $3.3 trillion, assuming some of these tax cuts actually roll off. What's the real point here? Donald Trump's promises to big oil and big donors to give them more of what they don't need. Tax breaks for the filthy rich and mega corporations paid for on the backs of me and you. I don't care if you think it's a good idea now. Just wait. Oh, by the way, they timed all the most painful cuts for 2026. Of course. We're going to get to all that with Kristen Crowell, Executive Director of Fair Share America, at the bottom of the hour. But I promised you a little bit of hopefulness, and I intend to deliver. And first, Susan, what I want to say about where we are in this moment is that when we protest, when we lobby, when we call our elected officials, the response isn't overnight. The response often takes months. It's in the next election cycle. My mom, whom I love dearly, was recently at a luncheon with a bunch of her friends that she went to grade school with, the vast majority of whom identify as Republican. And she started talking about politics. My mom's no political wonk, but she felt motivated. And she said she was really nervous when she was talking about it. And she knew most of her friends disagreed with her and might think some such about her, but she did it anyways. And 2 days later, she got a note in the mail from one of her friends at that lunch thanking her for speaking up. That's what it's about. It's about individual conversations at scale, en masse. It's about all of us showing up. And all of this reminded me of a poem written by Adrienne Rich. And again, kudos to Matt Rothschild for the inspiration to use poetry to help put things in perspective. And the poem by Adrienne Rich is called A Mark of Resistance. And it's a metaphor for what's happening right now. Here it is. Stone by stone, I pile this cairn of my intention, with the noon's weight on my back. Exposed and vulnerable across the slanting fields, which I love but cannot save from floods that are to come. Can only fasten down with this work of my hands, these painfully assembled stones, in the shape of nothing that has ever existed before, a pile of stones, an assertion that this piece of country matters for large and simple reasons. A mark of resistance, a sign. You are each a mark of resistance and a sign. And it is a mark of resistance and a sign that we must reestablish every day to enable and catalyze the change that we wish to see in this world. And this isn't easy work, and it's not work that can be done with one phone call or one protest or one radio show or even one case. There are over 250 cases currently challenging the lawlessness of the wannabe tin pot dictator. But we can't rely on the courts, and we certainly can't rely on Congress. We can only rely on each other. It's simple, and yes, we feel the noon's weight on our collective back. But you, Susan, you, Jim, me, Maggie, and everybody, we all have that responsibility each and every day.
And by speaking out that way, not only poetically, but also whether it's the note that's written to someone who does stand up with a certain amount of trepidation about how this is going to be received, you do something else. And it is important in and of itself, which is you send the message that you are not alone. That when you hear these things on the news and you think, huh, that doesn't sound quite right to me, and you go to another place and it turns out that, yes, your neighbor feels the same way, and suddenly you've got not only a sense of community, about the rightness of your position. But yes, indeed, Maggie, as the poem just says, you can translate that into some action. Maybe you do have to go into federal court. Maybe you do have to do other things, some civil disobedience, perhaps, of the sort that other nations have seen in recent times. But it does give you that sense that you are not alone and that your view, your voice is well-founded and based upon common sense and based upon the history that you have lived in this nation.
And at base, again, I've said this before on the show, this is cross-partisan. This is not about it's Donald Trump and I think he's great in this moment. This is about ensuring a functional democracy. This is about ensuring that working people who are the backbone of this country are respected in our government's policies, that our value is reflected in our government's budgets, and that government works for the vast majority of us, the vast majority of the time. I'm sick of the tech oligarchs and the billionaire boys club. We deserve better. We're going to talk with Kristen Crowell of Fair Share for America when we come back about doing just that. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, the Senate voted in a tie, so the vice president broke it, and now we've got the big, brutal bill to contend with back in the House of Representatives. So our agenda, for those that care about working people in good faith in this country, is to kill the bill and then hold every single Republican in the Senate and the House who voted for it accountable and vote them out in 2026. I've got a great guest to help us understand the ramifications for the middle class folks everywhere, but especially here in Wisconsin. She's a Wisconsinite herself. Her name is Kristen Crowell. She's the executive director of Fair Share America, and she's been on quite the bus tour. Welcome to the show, Kristen.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we've got the approval of the big brutal bill in the Senate, but it's got to go back to the House. So we still have an opportunity to call up our representatives and say no to, frankly, taxpayer-supported handouts for the billionaire class. What should people be doing and thinking about in this moment?
Well, you're absolutely right. This is not a done deal. We are watching exactly how hard it is for the Republicans to muster enough votes. They had, when it was in the House floor the first time, there was a one vote margin passed by one vote. Then it went to the Senate, ended in a tie. Vice President had to step in to do his minder's bidding and do the bidding of Donald Trump. So got it over the finish line. And there are members, there are Republican senators, Murkowski in particular, yes, that voted yes, but also said, this is terrible for the American people. And we hope this is not the final bill. So it goes back to the House. So it is all hands on deck to do everything we possibly can to register our opposition and to push as hard as possible, because we only need a handful of Republican House members at this point to just stand with their constituents and grow a spine and stand up to the president and deny him the victory and frankly protect us from another handout to the billionaire class.
The thing that seems so perplexing to me and that I think is so concerning is, one, just the sheer scale of what we're looking at. This is the by far the largest budget blows to the middle class in American history, of working, yes, people that still are living on a razor's edge, right? Yeah. And that's the conceit here, if you will. Oh, if you work hard, you'll be okay. That's the social contract. And yet so many people are working hard and they're not okay. This will make them worse. And it is unbelievably unpopular nationwide. I think the sort of sane washing of some of this, the way media talks about it, this is not popular. America, every poll, whether you're talking Fox or Quinnipiac or Marquette poll, when the actual details of this are presented to people, it's overwhelmingly unpopular for both Republicans and Democrats. So why in the hell are Republicans lining up to support this when they know it will cause harm? I don't believe the lies that they're peddling to themselves. Is it because they fear Donald Trump and the MAGA movement? Is that what we're looking at?
I think that is the main question that sane, rational people are asking. Like, how much greed will satisfy the billionaire class? I mean, we're talking about the top 0.01% are going to walk out of this deal with $250,000.
But if I have
$100 million, what's $250,000? Like, what does it matter? You cannot spend that much money in a lifetime. So it's perplexing. But I should just underscore, this is the most egregious, horrible, mind-blowing piece of legislation ever, like ever even conceptualized in the history of the country. And there is mass pushback happening on the ground. The polling, what we're seeing on the ground all across the country, and I've been really fortunate to be on a national bus tour, Stop the Billionaire Giveaway. We kicked off 11 days ago in New York, and we're going all the way to California. We were in La Crosse this morning. Yesterday, we were in Racine and Oshkosh. And what we are seeing on the ground is that there is an outrage that is coming from both sides of the aisle. This is not just a bunch of lefty Democrats getting real pissed off at the Republicans. This is something like I've never seen before. We have farmers coming out to tell their story. We have small business owners that are like, this is not about business and the economy. This will blow a massive hole in the economy. This is damaging. Obviously, the big headlines are, you know, 16 to 17 million people will lose their healthcare coverage. Another 4 million people may, you know, will lose their food assistance. And Maggie, you're exactly right. We are already stretched to the brink. People are living paycheck to paycheck. 60% of the country right now has about $600 in their checking account. And I don't think they have any idea what that's like to have to make choices between what am I going to pay this week? Am I going to pay the electricity bill? Are we going to get enough money for groceries? Can I make my car payment? It's just mind-blowing.
To put that into context, just for Wisconsinites, close to 100,000 Wisconsinites will lose their health care coverage because of the giveaways to the billionaires and mega corporations. So thank you, Tony Weed. Thank you, Derek Van Orten. Thank you to every single Republican in the congressional delegation from the state of Wisconsin. And oh, I left out you, Ron Johnson, who swore up and down that you wouldn't tolerate these increases to the deficit. And yet you lined up as well. 100,000 will lose healthcare coverage, nearly 100,000 in Wisconsin. Nearly 150,000 will lose their emergency food assistance, and we're going to lose about 2,700 jobs. Now, here's the kicker that just blows my mind, Kristen, is that two-thirds of these job losses, people getting sicker and dying sooner and going hungrier, are happening in the GOP congressional districts. Right. They're running for the hills. If this was some signature piece of I'm so proud of legislation, they'd be showing up at the town halls. How do people make it clear that they need their representatives to actually represent their interests as opposed to the billionaire class? What should folks do?
Well, I mean, this morning in La Crosse, there were about 120 of us that went to Congressman Van Orden's office, banging on the door, just saying, can we have a conversation? Can we meet with you? This was before the Senate ultimately passed it, but it was right in those few hours. They won't even open the door. So there's no rational advice to give to voters other than keep turning out, keep letting the records show we don't stand for this. And it's why we're on the bus tour. We are trying to say, there are real people behind these spreadsheets. This isn't just a shell game that you can pass, in Washington behind closed doors. We are real people. We exist. And that if you take this final vote and you vote against us, we're drawing a line in the sand. You're either with us or with the billionaire class. And there will be hell to pay if you side against your own constituents and throw us off healthcare and throw us into a catastrophic economic situation. People are really angry and, you know, underestimate us at your own peril. Yes. Is the message I would say, because they're so out of touch, which is with what is happening in their own districts.
Right. And Kristen, to your point, there's a record being made of this for all time, not just for the end of the week, not just when we're barbecuing a couple of days over the 4th of July, forever, right? And when we go to the polls on November 3rd of 2026, we're going to remember that as well. Let me ask you also about timing on this. So it's back in the House now. Again, your wonderful bus tour, getting people animated about this from Wisconsin across the country. Talk to us about the hours that we've got right now to continue that advocacy. When is the vote coming up, do you think, in the House of Representatives? Difficult to know. I know Mike Johnson's still looking for his votes, right? So we don't know exactly how that's going to play out. What's your best prediction about how much time we have to do this incredibly important advocacy?
I mean, today is Tuesday, right? Still?
Right.
I think they're looking to bring this to the a vote before the 4th of July.
That's what the president wants, right? He wants this. Yep.
They want to have their victory lap. I think it's going to be much harder than they expect to actually pull this off before the 4th of July. But then again, we woke up this morning, we huddled with our folks who are on the Hill in D.C. all night, and we did not expect them to get the vote pulled off by noon today. So it is anyone's guess. There is a clock. We've seen Speaker Johnson take things to the floor before they have things buttoned up to force. You know, people want to go home. There are a bunch of whiny, entitled people in Congress, and they want to go home. So my hunch is we're going to see something sooner rather than later. But I think it's going to be really hard to cobble together all of the votes, given especially what Republicans, you know, I talked about Murkowski. Senator Tillis also said this is going to decimate states. This is going to throw hundreds of thousands of people off. So you don't have to listen to me.
Right,
you don't have to listen to Democrats. Listen to what the own Republicans who are inside those meetings are saying. This is a disaster.
We actually have that sound from Senator Tom Tillis. It's cut six. Let's take a listen.
Mr. President, I come today to explain my vote yesterday for voting against the motion to proceed on this bill. What do I tell 663,000 people in 2 years or 3 years? When President Trump breaks his promise by pushing them off of Medicaid because the funding's not there anymore, guys. When the White House, senators advising the president, are not telling him that the effect of this bill is to break a promise. And you know, the last time I saw a promise broken around health care, with respect to my friends on the other side of the aisle, it's when somebody said, if you like your health care, you can keep it. If you like your doctor, you can keep it. We found out that wasn't true. That made me the second Republican Speaker of the House since the Civil War, ladies and gentlemen, because we betrayed the promise to the American people. Now, Republicans are about to make a mistake on health care and betraying a promise. It is inescapable.
I mean, that is just the bottom line. The president has lied and lied some more. He is enforcing MAGA discipline. Every single elected official on Capitol Hill that votes against the big brutal bill, they know they'll be primaried. But guess what? That's the job that you signed up for. No one's entitled to hold those seats in perpetuity. You damn well better stand up for your constituents.
That's right. I mean, I think the other interesting thing, like, it's fascinating to me to see Musk also tweeting that if you vote for them, he's going to primary them. Right. So, like, maybe just vote with your constituents and stop listening to your daddy minders with their big checkbooks of which check should I pay attention to? Maybe pay attention to your voters and the people in your communities, and then you have a better chance of continuing to do your job.
Going home, right? Yep. Going home and I look in the mirror and saying, "This, what's right to do here? I represent these constituents. I represent the American people. We need some health care. We need some education, right? We need all these kinds of things to support our economy. $3.3 trillion in a deficit. That can't be a good thing. I'm not the economist that you and Maggie are, but even I know that that's not a good thing.
Folks, big thanks to Kristen Crowell doing the hard work out there on the bus, coast to coast. She's the executive director of Fair Share America. Thank you so much for spending some time with us, Kristen, and we'll see you on the bus tour. Folks, keep it locked for some final thoughts with Jim and I when we return right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Thanks, Kristen.
Thank you.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Just to let you all know what is coming up, we got a special pre-July 4th celebration on the Maggie Dawn Show for you tomorrow. We'll be joined by historians, political scientists, and a media expert to help us understand our past, to better contextualize our present, and all in the service of moving forward together. Now, I promised when we were talking about before that I would give you the four P's of progress, and I don't mean that in the progressive sense. I mean that in progress, making it better for the vast majority of us, the vast majority of the time. And there's four elements to that. They're all P's, so I'll give them to you. I'm going to call them the pistons of progress. Yes, there will be court proceedings, and there will be polls and polling. And make no mistake, polls and polling matter. Donald Trump watches them almost as much as he watches Fox News. But polls and polling matter. Your opinions matter. And that bleeds into protest movements, popular protests, the expression of our collective will, which ultimately then spills over and impacts who we choose as our political leaders. Derek Van Orten and Tony Weed and Brian Steele-style keep lying to us about what's actually going to happen with Medicaid, and the proof will be in the pudding. We will see who's right. Do the billionaires just get more billions while the rest of us are left begging for scraps from the table that the middle class built? Remember, upwards of 72% of the U.S. GDP is driven by consumer spending. Who actually engages in consumer spending? Hint, it's not Jeff Bezos, despite the fact that he just dropped $57 million on a wedding. That's the exception, not the rule. Consumers in this country are the middle class and working people. Oh, yeah, and migrants. Jim, I wonder, as we look forward, what do you want people to be thinking about as we face down the big, brutal bill, which will in some form eventually come about? What do you think people should be focused on?
I think we look right back to the legislature. You and I, all your listeners know, it's Article 1 of the Constitution, right? It was supposed to be the people, the group that represents the people, right? It shouldn't be just the Supreme Court and the president who's ruling by executive order. And so here are a couple of numbers. 490 days until the next election. That's the midterm. 550 days until a new Congress is sworn in. And in addition to all of the inspiration that you give every day on this broadcast and in other settings, here's the other one to focus on. We look at the Tom Tillises and, yes, the Susan Collinses and the Ron Johnsons of the world, and we think about who is representing us every single day. And one of the things you can do is identify, whether it's in your own district, in your own state, or someplace else around the country, a good, solid candidate who will look in the mirror and say, this is important, I'm going to do what's right, who is not going to be so wedded to his or her position that they will do nothing other than run again for elective office and do what the president wants. We can find those people in America, and we can find, frankly, 218 people who will acknowledge that indeed the president is not living up to his commitment to faithfully execute the laws. We can find maybe 67 people in the Senate. That's a big lift. That's a big lift, I know, who will also say, you know what, this cannot go on. And we've got 490 days to find those people, to campaign for them. Yes, indeed. Unfortunately, we dump money in that. We know that's also the result of the Supreme Court telling us what campaigns are all about. We do everything we can possibly do in addition to the four Ps, the protests, all the other things. And we also focus on changing our legislature, because if they're passing this bill today, tomorrow, whenever they do, they've got an awful lot of capacity to do this beyond November 6th. We need to be focused on that day, too, and find out those, identify those people, find the mechanisms to change our Congress. I'm not talking about just Republicans and Democrats, the people of conscience, the people who will go there, regardless of the party, and do what is right on behalf of their constituents. 550 days until they take the oath of office, January 2nd, 2027, and promise to follow the law and to legislate in a way that's reflective of what their constituents are telling them.
Here is the big brutal bill in a nutshell. This is based on data from the Yale Budget Lab and compiled by economist Justin Wolfers. The poorest tenth of the country will see their annual incomes, which are below the poverty line, decrease by $2,600, while the richest tenth, again, that's 10%, the richest 10%, will see their incomes go up by $7,200. If that is not the absolute wrong expression of values, I don't know what is. And everyone in between, so the bottom 90% of us, we're losing somewhere in the ballpark of nearly $3,000 to around $500 from our annual incomes. That isn't the way it's supposed to be. We're not supposed to fund the billionaire class by punishing folks who are working poor. That has never been a good idea. And the moments in time where that has occurred have resulted in great unrest in this country and the Great Depression. We deserve better. Now, as we approach these next days, remember, it's on you to do everything that you can to oppose the brutal bill. Get on the horn, call your congressman, speak your piece from bar stools and benches and pews, because it is up to we the people. That's going to do it for me. Thanks to Jim Santel, a fine co-host any day of the week, but especially on Tuesdays and Fridays when you join me.
Always a delight, Maggie.
Happy 4th of July to everybody. Tune in tomorrow for our special pre-4th of July episode. And remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.